Welcome to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Hey, I'm Eric Fox.
I'm the boisterous better Zach.
And I'm Lita McLeod.
And you're listening to the Press Box here on CKDJ 107.9. So let's kick off the show with some talk about the local sports. Now, there is a ton of news in the local sports world over the last week since our last show. So, Zach, what can you fill us in on? Let's start with the Blackjacks. What can you fill us in on with the Blackjacks?
Well, the Blackjacks just signed the 10th player this year. And this player has gotten a lot of experience over the years. His name's Joel Friesen. He's a 6'5" guard from Abbotsford, BC, and he's played 216 games as a pro in Canada and Ukraine. So he's going to be bringing lots of experience and skill to the team.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that he's going to be a good signing. I mean, it seems like every time we talk about one of the signings for the Blackjacks, the guys have the stats to back up how powerful and how incredible this team looks like it's going to be. Now, just quickly to wrap up with the CEBL, breaking news just yesterday that the schedule will be pushed back. So it will be 14 games, and the estimated start date was supposed to be June 5th, but now they're going to be starting June 24th. I know it's only a couple of weeks, but what are your guys' takes on what that'll do for the teams and for the players?
Honestly, I'm disappointed. I was really looking forward to getting some more action to watch. But I mean, they got to do what's safest for the players in the overall season, right? So unfortunately, it's kind of one of those it is what it is situations for me.
And yeah, with more time to prepare, I think it's better for the team. Like we just got three new recruits, Ali Sal, Guillaume Pepin, and Grady Kanku. Just gives them more time to get used to the pace that the CEBL has. And Joel Friesen, he actually was the first player to ever be drafted back when the CEBL launched. So it's pretty cool that he can mentor all these young recruits.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be exciting. And I mean, I totally understand where they're coming from with the start being delayed. I mean, hopefully by the end of June, at least they'll be able to possibly start with like at least minimal amount of fans. Because I mean, according to some of our higher ups in the political game, they're saying that most people should have at least their first shot by the end of June. So hopefully that will be kind of a target, have a few fans, and then expand on that based on the vaccinations and everything else with the COVID pandemic. Now, moving on, huge news this past week from the Ottawa Titans baseball team. I can't say that I'm surprised that this news happened, but what is your take on this, Zach? Because it's insane news for the Titans and a few of the other teams in Canada from that league.
Well, with so much uncertainty about the reopening of the border between the United States and Canada, the Frontier League just doesn't want to take the risk with the Ottawa Titans and Trois-Rivières-Aigle, and they're not going to be fielding for the 2021 season. But their plan instead is pretty interesting. They're going to form a kind of super team between the Titans, the Aigle, and the Quebec Capitals. Basically, yeah, they're all going to take the Canadian players from there and just make one big super Canadian team. And all the other non-Canadian players, they're going to be subjected to a draft among the other 13 teams in the league next Thursday. So it's going to be interesting to see where the Ottawa teams or the Ottawa Titan team so far ends up. But yeah, the Team Quebec is going to start the first half of the season as a travel team where their home games are going to be in Saugat, Illinois. But if the border does open up, they're going to be playing the remaining of their home games between Quebec City and Trois-Rivières. So if the border doesn't open by July 13th, Team Quebec is going to finish the season as a road team. I'm excited to see what kind of hodgepodge this Team Quebec is going to turn out to be.
Yeah, it should be very interesting to see because, I mean, anytime you say, okay, we're going to put together basically an all-star team of Canadian players. I mean, when you look at the hockey, that usually turns out very well for Canada. So maybe this team Quebec will be a team that can just absolutely dominate the league. But like you said, time will tell based on who's going to be drafted by other teams or dispersed to other teams next week. But it's going to be exciting. And obviously the Ottawa Titans have already said we will be back in 2022. So you don't have to worry. We will have a baseball team back. This isn't like the beginning and the end of the Titans, even without playing a single game in Ottawa. Now, moving to the world of soccer. So Atletico Ottawa, we've discussed them on the last few weeks in regards to training camp starting out in Spain. And then you have all of the news of the CPL and everything like that. So they have a couple new signings. Have you guys seen anything about these signings, and what can you tell me about them?
Well, the team signed a very young player, 22-year-old right winger Zach Verhoeven. He's played the last two seasons at Pacific FC. He made 33 appearances over the two seasons, and he's managed 7 points in all those appearances. So that's pretty good for a guy his age. He attended the University of British Columbia, played for the Thunderbirds, made a bunch of appearances there, scoring 12 goals, adding 22 assists across 3 years. So he's a big points getter for being so young. So I think he plays with a lot of intensity. And one of the goals for Atletico Ottawa is developing young talent. And I think that's what this signing is all about, is they're getting their hands on a player with strong foundations, and they're just going to do their best with him and make him a better player for it, I think.
I would agree with that. I mean, like you said, he's 22 years old and he's consistent and consistently only getting better with each season. So it's going to be exciting to see what the team does with him.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, having as many young players as you can is always helpful, because it helps develop their skills, but also the youth soccer movement in Canada. And it'll help give players that are in that age range coming up the chance to be like, hey, there's someone that's not much older than me playing in this professional league. So that could be me in the near future. Now, I know that they had another signing just on the 20th, and they announced the signing of 27-year-old Canadian and Trinidad and Tobago international winger Ryan Telfer. Now, I'm pretty excited about this, because Ryan Telfer, he spent the last two seasons with fellow CPL side York 9, which is now York United FC. He managed 10 goals, 3 assists, including scoring the first goal in Canadian Premier League history just 3 minutes into the first CPL match. He's second in all-time club appearances at 39, but he's 27, born in Mississauga, raised in Trinidad and Tobago, returned to Canada and continued youth soccer with the Aaron Mills Eagles, which actually is funny enough that it's the same minor soccer team that my cousin played for in Mississauga. So I'm sure he probably played with him at one point or another. And then he went on to play at York University, where he won an Ontario University Athletics, OUA, and CIS championship, which is now the U Sports, obviously. But he also played League One Ontario side Vaughan Azzurri in 2016 and 2017. He signed with TFC 2 of the USL, made 38 appearances, 1 goal, 1 assist. And then in 2018, he signed with the big club MLS club Toronto FC, made 19 appearances across all competitions, 1 goal, 2 assists. He scored his first and only MLS goal, a game winner against Orlando City FC on May 18th, 2018. And being a Toronto FC fan as well, and having been to so many of the games, I've seen him play live, and I am excited to see him in Ottawa. What do you guys take on this?
I think he's going to be great for the culture. I mean, you just listed every reason why he's going to benefit this team moving forward, especially with so many young players on it already. I mean, he's talented and he's going to help us build moving forward. It's absolutely incredible.
And I think it's pretty cool that the team now has the first draft pick of the league and the first goal scorer as well. So Ryan Telfer is going to be a huge asset to the team for his speed, his experience, and being a leader for the young guns.
Yeah, I mean, I like I said, I've seen him play live in some of the games that I've watched or games that I've been to for TFC. And I mean, he's an exciting player, so it will be definitely interesting to watch. But I'm excited to see what Atletico Ottawa has to offer once they actually kick off the season, once they get back from Madrid and quarantine and all that stuff after their training camp. Now, lastly, on this segment, let's talk about the CFL. The CFL dropped some big news on Wednesday about the schedule. It's kind of expected. I mean, the schedule was supposed to start at the beginning of June, which meant that training camp was going to start within the next couple weeks. We all knew that nothing was really going to happen at that point, at that early stage. So what can you guys say about this schedule change and what the details? Have you guys seen any of this stuff?
Yeah, it's a big drag having to play the Grey Cup right in the middle of December. I don't know what field they're going to put it on, but no matter what field it's going to be cold and snowy. They also changed the number of games in the season from 18 to 14. So that's going to create a whole other mentality for players, coaches, even fans.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And my concern with having a later start as well is, I mean, the NFL season is going to be starting around that time as well. So are they really going to benefit and have that full fan participation with the NFL also going on at the same time? I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's a valid point. I mean, you're used to having CFL be the main football league on television in Canada and the United States in June, July, and then the beginning of August. And then you have, like you said, the preseason of the NFL starts in August, runs through until the beginning of the season in September. But now they're starting August 5th and pushing back that Grey Cup, like Zach was mentioning, December 12th in Hamilton. I mean, yeah. I don't know about you, but December 12th in Hamilton, it's going to be cold. It's probably going to be very snowy. It's probably going to be very cold. I've been to a Grey Cup in the late November where it was indoors and it was fantastic. I've worked a Grey Cup outdoors in late November and it was extremely cold. So I don't know if I would be lining up for tickets to sit in Tim Hortons Field in Hamilton on December 12th to watch a Grey Cup, no matter how much I want to be there.
Well, exactly, right? Like, that's not the ideal time that people want to spend outside.
And it's the middle of the month of Christmas. I don't want to sit down for the Grey Cup when I got shopping to think about.
Definitely. I can't agree more. It's an interesting decision to push it back. I understand they didn't want to sacrifice that many games, but I still think that they should have just been like, okay, we'll start in August. We'll play a limited number of games, still have the regular playoffs and the Grey Cup in November. Because, I mean, like I said, yes, we've had those fantastic images of Grey Cups past where it's snowing. It's the true Canadiana, but December is pretty cold and pretty gross most years. I mean, who knows? Barring the fact that this year we've had like 20 degree weather in March and April, maybe we'll have like 15, 10 degree weather in November, December. I mean, this year's been really weird for weather, so we will see what happens there. Well, that does it for the first segment of the Press Box here on CKDJ 107.9. Stick around and we'll be back to talk some pro sports.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Fox.
I'm Zach Netto.
And I'm Lita McLeod.
And you're listening to the Press Box here on CKDJ 107.9. Now, guys, let's talk about pro sports. And what a better way to start than with the Belleville Senators, who are on a tear. in the last week, they have won three games in a row against the Stockton Heat at the Saddle Dome in Calgary. 4-2 on Wednesday last week, 4-2 Thursday last week, and then 4-1 on Saturday last week. I can't get enough of the Belleville Senators this year. The young guys are playing so well. What do you guys think of this so far?
I want to talk about the individual performances of some of these players. On the game on Wednesday, Gustafsson had a huge win, 30 out of 32 saves. Igor Sokolov got his 10th goal of the season, and Angus Cruikshank got two assists. Remember that name because it's coming up later. Igor scored again on Thursday, and Jean-Christophe Beaudin got his first goal of the season on Thursday. And then on Saturday, Gustafsson got another win with Angus Cruikshank getting another two assists. Those two just have some amazing chemistry, I think. The Belleville Senators must listen to this show because I think we fired them up.
Oh, I fully agree. I mean, we were talking about how a couple of weeks ago they were 5-10. They were losing more than they were winning. And I swear they probably do listen to our show because they were like, you know what? These guys on the press box, they're pissed at us. Let's get that win. Let's get this streak going and let's turn this season around. So I don't know about you guys, but I mean, they have a big set coming up Friday, Saturday against Laval. It's going to be tight. It's going to be interesting. I'm hoping that they can get the wins and continue this winning streak. We'll see what they can do. But I mean, based on what you were saying, Zach, in regards to Gustafsson and Nat, Sokolov, Cruikshank, like some of these young guys are really stepping up over the last week or so. So it's going to be an exciting rest of the season and an exciting week ahead for the Belleville Senators.
Especially since they won't play again until May 2nd after the Saturday game against LaFalle Rocket. So they're going to have plenty of time to workshop things if things don't go according to plan.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a bit of a break in the schedule, but it'll be a good break if they don't happen to play very well over the last few games before that break. Now, moving on to the NHL. Let's start with our very own Ottawa Senators. We all know last Saturday they went into Montreal and shut out the Montreal Canadiens 4-0. Montreal was coming off a huge confidence boosting win on Friday night, and then they put up the goose egg. And what can you say about allowing four goals by Carey Price? I mean, Carey Price made his return to the lineup. He was hyped up. He's always hyped up. He is one of the best goalies in the league when he's on his game, but he was definitely not sharp that game. What did you think of the game, Zach?
Well, the biggest thing for me is Matt Murray coming back with such a bang. You know, he's been known as an inconsistent goalie, but with these last two games, man, he was lights out. And Drake Batherson scoring twice in the first game. And then against the Flames, Tkachuk, Norris scored their 15th and 16th goal, respectively. Connor Brown getting two goals. The Sens are playing really good hockey right now, and I hope to see more of it.
Yeah, I can't agree more. And I mean, like I said, in regards to Carey Price, 11 saves on 15 shots, allowing four goals. Yikes. I mean, that is not a good night. And I mean, I saw people all over social media going, oh, wow, the Sens only had 15 shots. I'm like, yeah, but they still scored four goals. Like, I don't care if they score four goals on 15 shots or four goals on 60 shots. As long as the pucks are going in the back of the net, that's all that matters, right? Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't get the frustration. It's like, yeah, they may not be getting a lot of shots, but they're making them count. But, I mean, they have a huge set coming up that we'll talk about in our last segment as a look ahead to who they're playing over the next week. And it's going to be an exciting week for the Ottawa Senators. Now,
I agree with that. I 100% agree with that, especially with who they're facing. It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, 100%. 110% even. I'll up you there. I'll tell you, you know what? No, it's not 100% agree. It's 110%. Let's go. Now, moving on, Zach, you're our Raptors guy. What can you tell us about the Raptors, the news that's coming out of the Raptors recently, and how they're doing?
Well, it was just announced that James Harden has a bit of a setback when he was rehabbing his hamstring, and now he's out indefinitely. It might mean he's not going to make the playoffs, but it might mean he will. And the Nets are still looking like the favorites to win this NBA championship, despite a pretty shaky April. But in regards to the Raptors, they're starting to look like themselves again. They got big wins against San Antonio, Orlando, and Oklahoma City. They're fighting for their lives, just trying to beat Chicago and Washington for that 10th spot in the Eastern Conference. And the team's really showing off their roster depth. These days, we're used to seeing the star Raptors usually on the IR list. But Nick Nurse is focused more on who he has come game time rather than who he doesn't. And the guys are really putting in work playing defense, not being selfish with the ball in the opposing team's zone. And it just looks like everybody's giving their all. And it's awesome to see. Looks like their fire is still there. I like watching this basketball way more than seeing a team tank for a better playoff position. And this past Monday, the Raptors signed Yuta Watanabe to a standard contract as opposed to his two-way contract. I think he definitely deserves it. He gets an extra $200,000 out of it. And for his consistent level of play, it's a steal. I think he's really good. And he even scored a career-high 21 points last Friday against the Orlando Magic. So I think this team might have the potential to make a run for it if we just keep winning, get two more wins. It's going to be hard, though.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that they're going to definitely be in tough, but I think they can do it. They have the championship pedigree from a lot of their returning players that they've had over the years. And some of these big signings that they've made have definitely helped out down the stretch. So we shall see what happens. Now, Lita, you are our NFL expert. What can you fill us in on the big news in the NFL over the last week or so?
Well, there was some breaking news yesterday regarding some rule changes that are going to be implemented in the coming season. So we touched on it last week. Number changes have passed. The owners voted yes. So this upcoming season, don't be surprised if you see some defensive players such as cornerbacks rocking number 2 instead of number 22. Also on the changes is there's going to be no more overtime for preseason games. I think that's fantastic. It doesn't really serve a purpose anyway. Some rules that are still getting ironed out would be the frustratingly slow and ever contentious replay rules. One of the proposals that has been brought forth this week is to help fix this issue, allowing replay assistants to be given additional responsibilities and access to speak with on-field officials in a limited scope, such as on calls versus complete and incomplete passes, whether a ball carrier has reached a first down or a goal line marker, and whether or not ball carriers actually have control and are down by contact. So definitely some interesting rules that are going to be changed coming into the 2021 season. I'm excited. I think they're going to help the process a lot smoother. Also within the NFL, a high quarterback prospect out of Ohio State with the Buckeyes, Justin Fields, he actually came out yesterday and disclosed that he's been managing epilepsy and takes medication to manage his condition. Generally, this wouldn't be a problem. However, as an NFL quarterback, you're likely going to take a fair amount of hits. So his draft stock has dropped slightly. Overall, this guy was predicted to go number 2. Since then, he's dropping down the boards past even the top 10 picks. So it's going to be interesting to see how this quarterback prospect, who scored 22 touchdowns and only 6 interceptions last season, is going to fare in the draft coming up.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Hearing how highly touted he was and the fact that this may cause some teams to be a little bit squeamish about possibly drafting him, it will definitely be interesting to see where he lands on that draft board on draft day. Now, Lita, I haven't really been keeping up with this, but the draft is coming up soon, is it not?
Yeah, so the draft is actually coming up. It's going to start April 29th, and it goes until May 1st. So it's going to be really exciting to see how that draft order is going to go. Of course, Trevor Lawrence is predicted to go first to the Jacksonville Jaguars. But after that, it's anybody's ball game.
Yeah, definitely. I can't stress enough. Like the NFL draft, I find is one of the more, if not the most unpredictable draft out of any of the pro sports. Like most times you watch, say, the NHL draft, and you can usually predict the top three, top five, maybe even top 10 sometimes, without one or two teams maybe going completely off the board. But the NFL draft, it's like, here's our number one pick and then everybody else. There's never really that much of a guaranteed number two, guaranteed number three, guaranteed number four, and so on.
Oh, no, not at all. And this draft is stacked, especially in the quarterback position. So there's so many teams that are hungry for quarterbacks. It's going to be really interesting to see who goes where and in what order.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Lita. But that does it for our second segment here on the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9. Stick around. We will be talking about the craziness that was the start and what looks like the end of the Super League over in Europe, as well as a few other major stories in sports coming up just after the break. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Fox.
I'm Zach Natto.
And I'm Lita McLeod.
And let's kick off this third segment with the shenanigans that is the start and what looks like the doomed ending to the Super League. Now, for those of us that aren't familiar with it, or for those of you that aren't familiar with it, Lita, let's fill the listeners in on what exactly is going on with this European Super League soccer footy league thing that's kind of popped up out of nowhere and then turned into, like I said, shenanigans.
It's chaos. It's chaos, Eric. I mean, there were 12 teams involved in this: Real Madrid, Manchester United, Liverpool, Juventus, Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, Inter Milan, AC Milan, Manchester, Chelsea, Tottenham, and Arsenal. Those are the 12 bad boys of soccer right now because they made fans angry. I mean, you had not only fans angry, but announcers and politicians. Okay, so the Super League was proposed involving all these teams. They were originally going to try to get 20 teams involved in total, with five rotating teams that would be chosen based off an undecided formula. Okay. And it's just wild, because when you look into the specifics of this team, if it were to go forward, it would essentially make the national leagues irrelevant in the soccer world, because just for establishing themselves, they would have made over $400 million, which is four times the amount that Bayern Munich actually earned winning the Champions League last year. So this has caused huge rifts. I mean, so much so that the Global Players Association and the Global Players Union is actually warning that if this league were to be implemented, it would have cultural identity impacts on the game of soccer. And the UEFA president actually came out on Monday and said straight up, any player that is involved in this proposed Super League is going to be banned from the World Cup and the European Championships.
Yeah, I mean, when you take the teams, like you said, like Juventus, like a Manchester United, a Liverpool, a Tottenham, and so many of these other teams, and then you look at those rosters, and Juventus is one of the best examples. You look at a guy like Cristiano Ronaldo. He is known around the world. And what happens if all the people from Portugal realize that, hey, he joined this Super League, but now he's not able to represent Portugal in the Europa League, in the Champions League, in the European Championships, or like you said, with FIFA, with UEFA, going in and saying, you're not allowed at the World Cup. Like, this is why there's so much frustration by the fans and by the supporters and the announcers. And like you said, politicians, people worldwide are livid that they decided to do this. And I mean, I understand where UEFA and FIFA are coming from, saying, hey, we already have this midweek tournament, these midweek tournaments like the Europa League and the Champions League that so many teams bust their butts to try and get into with the way that the standings fall in all the different leagues around Europe. But yet you want to create another thing that will be completely separate. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's insanity. And just like you said, you have so many high profile players on these teams that, I mean, a huge focus would be taken away from all those other leagues while this is going on. Could you imagine if, you know, let's say the NHL proposed something like this, where you have the top team saying, hey, you know what, we're going to take our skates and go elsewhere? People would lose it, and rightfully so.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, it would be ridiculous to see any other league do something like this. And I mean, the jokes and the jabs at these teams, at these team owners, at these players, is just, it's just been unreal. And like you said, social media has just exploded. The broadcasters, the politicians are livid, and I don't blame them one bit.
No, not at all. And it's going to be very interesting to see if there's going to be any consequences, whether immediate or down the road, for this proposal even being a thing.
Yeah, because I mean, they had, what was it, 12 teams, and there's already been a few that have said, nah, never mind. But it's like, if you were going to back out at first backlash, why did you do it in the first place? That's my question. That's my question, is like, why jump into this league in the first place, where your fans start to get mad at you and you go, oh, well, never mind, we're not going to do it.
Because they were going to make more money until their fans said, hey, you know what? No, that's not the way that you're going to get our money. This is, we like our soccer the way it is. Don't change what's working.
They really thought they could get away with it, but it only took 2 days for their plans to fall apart. I love it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's the memes that have been going around social media, like, born on this day, 2 days later, death. It's just unreal to watch the shenanigans of the Super League and what it means for the football soccer world, just to see like how many people of such high stature, how many high-end players would be affected by this. It's just something I never would have imagined in my life, considering if you're playing in Europe, any of the European leagues, you want to play in the Champions League. You want to be a Bayern Munich and win the Champions League. You want to be a Barcelona, a Juventus, a AC Milan, a Manchester United, Manchester City, any of those teams. You want to win the Champions League. That is like the coveted trophy for all of the European football leagues to win. And why would you mess that up by starting this extra Super League?
Mm-hmm. Not only are you messing up your chances to get that championship trophy, but you're messing up your chances with your fans. And that is the worst thing any sport team can do, is make their fans angry.
Yeah, especially footy fans. I mean, if you talk to anyone who follows any sort of footy team in the Europe, like the English Premier League, the Bundesliga in Germany, the Ligue 1 in France, like any of those leagues, people are just born and bred fans, supporters of those specific teams. And you tick them off enough, they're not like, they don't want to give up. They don't want to give up on you, but they will. And they will do it in a really harsh way, because like I said, they're born, they're bred, they're brought up on soccer. That's just the thing that happens over there. Like, that to them, if you go to England, soccer to them is what hockey is to us Canadians, like, plain and simple.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And like you said, this is a lesson for teams to take moving forward. If anybody has sort of plan similar to this Super League going forward?
Yeah. Yeah. The best advice is just don't.
Yeah.
Just
don't.
Just don't do it. Like, it's not worth it. It's not worth the headache. Even if it's a lot of money, it's just not worth it. Now that we've got that out of our system, Lita, let's talk about people just hurting other people and getting that anger out of their system. Let's go to the boxing world. What's up with the boxing world? Because I know you're a huge boxing fan.
Boxing has been interesting. I don't know which of you guys checked it out, but there was an interesting match this past week. Jake Paul got a first round knockout against Ben Askren to some interesting results, if social media has anything to say about that. Did you guys happen to watch it by any chance?
I checked it out. Yeah, there was a bunch of musical artists performing. Snoop Dogg was there, Ice Cube, Doja Cat, Justin Bieber, and heck, even Pete Davidson was there, but he didn't seem like he wanted to. He interviewed both fighters for the main event. They even had a slap fight between these two giant guys, and Pete Davidson and Ric Flair judged it. The fight before the main event, Regis Progred and Ivan El Terrible Redcatch. I mean, I question Ivan's record. He didn't look like he knew a thing about boxing out there. Progred looked really good. He hit Ivan so hard they had to stop the match. I thought he died, honestly. I thought Ivan was dead and they had to wheel him out of there.
Yeah, luckily he was not dead. I don't know if you actually saw that, but the sixth round drop that Progred got on Redcatch, it didn't even hit his ribs fully. It was actually a gray shot that dropped the poor man. So definitely feel bad for him. However, though, I do got some good news in regards to boxing, because there's going to be an amazing card tomorrow night. On the 23rd, on DAZN, my man Blair the Flair, woo, Cobbs is back in action. He's going to be starting off the card, which is the Munguia and Ballard card. And I got to tell you guys, this is the guy right here that got me addicted to watching boxing. He's a great athlete. He is 14-0-1 with 9 KO wins to his name. He's going to be taking on James Bacon, who's 26-4, 17 KOs to his name. And it's going to be a 10 round bout to open that card. Not only is Blair the Flair going to be on this card, but we have a guy from close to home. Arslanbek Makhmudov is going to be on this card. He's nicknamed the Lion, and it's his highly anticipated U.S. debut. He actually trains over in Montreal, where he signed with Eye of the Tiger Management, and he's trained by Mark Ramsey, who also trains one of my personal favorites to watch, Artur Beterbiev. This 31-year-old has 11 knockouts to his name. He's a heavyweight who's set for big things. That's going to be a 10-round bout as well, and he's going to be facing off against the Dominican Dynamite, Nagy Aguilera, and it's going to be an amazing card to watch.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be absolutely incredible. And I mean, you can't go wrong with a guy whose last name is Bacon. I mean, that sounds like it would be an absolutely incredible fight. Also, you know, I mean, it's just Bacon. Come on, you got to go with Bacon. I don't know about you, but maybe I'll just put my money on Bacon for getting a win.
Anything would be better than last week's boxing pay-per-view, if you could even call it a pay-per-view.
Oh, no. This one, I'm telling you, talent is on this card, not just the YouTube kind. Okay? You're going to see real fighters who have been training for years. I mean, Makhmudov, the Lion, he started boxing when he was 9 years old. He was originally from Russia, and he came over to Canada to pursue his boxing dream. And Blair the Flair, he's been boxing for years as well. He's an up-and-comer in the boxing world, and his story is absolutely incredible. He has gone through some adversity in life to get where he is now, and like I said, he lives up to his idol showmanship. Blair the Flair, woo, Gobbs is gonna come, and he's gonna get that knockout against James Bacon. I'm telling you.
Yeah, that sounds like it's going to be absolutely incredible. I might actually have to check it out. I'm not a huge boxing guy, but I might actually have to try and find a way to watch that for sure. Now, sticking with the fight world, Zach, you wanted to touch on the UFC. There's an enormous fight coming up this weekend, is there not?
Yep. This weekend, UFC 261, three titles are going to be on the line. But the main event, Kamaru Usman versus Jorge Masvidal, it's their second fight. I can't wait for it. Their last fight was a clear example of why Usman's so good. He knew who he was fighting. Jorge Masvidal is a guy who's got explosive energy, and he's a real knockout artist. So what did Kamaru Usman do to prepare for that? He planned accordingly. He used his size and his strength against him, closed off the distance between the two of them, and didn't allow Masvidal to get any offense off whatsoever. Masvidal believes he's ready to win this time after finishing his latest training camp. I still think Usman's going to win this one. I can see why Masvidal wants to try again, but he's on his way out, and I don't think he's going to be able to explode out of the gate against the size, speed, and strength of Usman. And just really quick, looking at this card, there's a fighter named Chris Weidman fighting Uriah Hall. And when I read it, I immediately thought of the former senator. So that was a trip down memory lane. All in all, though, I think it's going to be a great pay-per-view this weekend, guys.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that fight. And the fact that you mentioned Chris Weidman, I remember when he was with the Senators and there would be a Weidman UFC fight and his Twitter would just blow up. People tagging him going, oh my God, Chris Weidman, way to go. Like, what a fight. And he's like, dude, I'm not the UFC fighter. But yeah, I mean, Chris Weidman, Kamaru Usman, Jorge Masvidal, like so many big names on this card, and it is going to be absolutely unreal.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's going to be quite the fight to watch. Personally, I would put my money on Usman, but I think Jorge is still going to put up one heck of a fight, and I could actually see this going to another 5-round decision.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that it could go the full length. The last time that Usman and Masvidal fought, I agree with Zach. I mean, Usman was like, you know what? I have to play my game and get Masvidal off of his game. And he prevented Masvidal from doing any heavy damage. And if he can do the same thing, he's going to definitely come out on top this time. And I mean, I don't know about you guys, but Masvidal, like you said, he's a huge knockout threat, but Usman is just as dangerous in the octagon. He's an incredible fighter.
Yeah, no, Usman is absolutely incredible. I mean, both of them are, but I just feel like Usman has that added edge that Masvidal's still kind of lacking.
Yeah, definitely. I can't agree more. And I mean, while we're on that, when you look at the other two fights, the two title fights, Jessica Andrade versus Valentina Shevchenko is going to be unbelievable. And then another women's fight, which is Zhang Wei versus Rose Namajunas. I mean, Rose is an amazing fighter. I have so many friends that are like in love with her. She's just absolutely incredible. She is just absolutely unbelievable. When she gets in the octagon, she does not let anything bother her. So those three title fights are going to be absolutely incredible. It is going to be a fun night. And for that fact, it's also being done in Jacksonville, Florida with a sold out crowd. This is going to be a jam-packed arena, just like the good old days. I mean, yes, it's Florida. Yes, we're still in the COVID-19 pandemic, but they got to go with the fans, and it's going to be an interesting fight to see how the fighters feed off the energy, having so many fights over the last year with no fans and no energy in the building whatsoever.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, it's either going to be a great energy booster to them, or it's going to be a major distraction moving forward after so long not having that crowd there. I don't know about you, but I think I'm going to be a little jarred, so I can only imagine how jarred the fighters are going to be with that crowd.
Masvidal definitely feeds off the energy of the crowd, so it definitely is a feather in his cap for this fight.
Definitely, definitely. Now, lastly in this segment, breaking news yesterday, and we can't say that we were surprised, but unfortunate news that for the second year in a row, the Women's World Hockey Championships has been canceled. It was supposed to happen out in the East Coast, and it's absolutely heartbreaking for the women's teams, the women's players, just the women, like the sport of women's hockey in general, like to have their tournament canceled back-to-back years because of the COVID pandemic. Like I said, it doesn't really come as a surprise, but it was definitely hopeful that it would actually get off the rate, like off and going this year. But what do you think about this news, Lita?
It's discouraging. I mean, you have so many talented female hockey players that are dying for the chance to just, you know, get out there and play their game again. And for me personally, I can't help but wonder, I mean, this really wouldn't happen with, you know, multiple other leagues that don't include women, but I mean, you got to do what's safest for the players at the end of the day, but it's incredibly discouraging and frustrating to see.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, especially with the rise of the like quote unquote reboot, I guess, of the NWHL and the playoffs that just wrapped up and the Isabel Cup that was handed out, not to mention the Professional Women's Hockey Players Association Dream Gap Tour that they've been having over the last few months. This is just another reason why women in hockey and little girls that play hockey are striving to be the best that they can be, because they want to play in a Women's World Hockey Championship, play for their country, represent their country. And I mean, it's absolutely heartbreaking. I can't even imagine what the players are going through. I mean, like you said, you got to do what's safe. You got to do what's right for the players and for the fans and stuff like that. But it's another sad day for the Women's World Hockey Championships.
Especially when we were only just over 2 weeks out from kicking this thing off. And it's so close to the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing. So this kind of tournament is so important for picking players for to participate in the Olympics like that.
Yeah, no, like you guys said, it's going to be interesting to see how women's hockey can kind of rebound after two big cancellations like this. Hopefully the players can take this and focus their energy on getting better for when the season does happen. But it's very discouraging. I mean, like, especially because didn't the World Juniors happen?
Yeah. And I mean, that's the other question, right? Is like, you were able to have the World Junior Hockey Championships played in a bubble. Why not have a bubble for the Women's World Hockey Championships to at least give them the chance to play?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I feel like, I don't know, it could just be a personal thing, but I feel like there isn't as much priority to the women's hockey getting that equal opportunity. Again, like I said, you got to do what's safest for the players, but it raises some questions on how encouraging we're going to be with getting sports back up off the ground in a certain sense, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's definitely heartbreaking for them, and it's interesting to see what's going to happen with every other professional women's, professional men's tournament for that matter over the next few months to see what they decide. Because if the men's world hockey championships happen, there's going to be a lot more uproar, because I mean, why allow that when you won't allow the women's game to happen? So it'll definitely be an interesting tale, but like I said, It's an unfortunate circumstance, and hopefully the women's hockey world can bounce back from this. And I mean, I'm excited for the Olympics next winter, because come on, like, women's hockey at the Olympics is just always so incredible. And that Canada-US matchup that you pretty much guarantee will always happen in the gold medal game is definitely exciting to look forward to.
For sure. Nothing beats that grudge match at all. I mean, like, men's team, you're great and all, but there's just something about watching the women's hockey team take on the American women's hockey team, that just, it takes that intensity to another level.
Yeah, that couldn't be any truer, that's for sure. Well, that does it for this segment here on the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9. Stick around. We'll have a bit of a look ahead to what the week ahead looks like for the Ottawa Senators, plus what everybody is waiting for, Zach's picks. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
All right, welcome back. I'm Eric Fox.
I'm Zach Netto.
And I'm Lita McLeod.
And let's get our final segment going with a quick look ahead at what the week ahead looks like for the Ottawa Senators. Now, I know, Lita, you and I kind of teased about this earlier in the show, but this week has a very, very crucial four-game set coming up for the Ottawa Senators starting tonight in Vancouver. All four games against Vancouver. How big is this four-game set going to be against the Canucks, Lita?
I think it's going to be a big set, especially since the Canucks have been amazing on the ice after their whole COVID situation. They've been dominating, and if they can keep that up, they might be able to squeeze right in there and take somebody's spot.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, having two big wins back to back against the Leafs to kick off their post-COVID era, this four-game set is going to be make or break. And it's also a make or break for the Senators, because the Sens go into tonight's game against Vancouver 3 points behind Vancouver. So, I mean, Ottawa wins three out of four of these games, even all four of these games, they're going to move past Vancouver. And depending on how the rest of the league's games go, they could even move up past Calgary and start to push towards that fourth spot that is Montreal. So this four-game set is going to be huge for Vancouver to try and get back into the playoff hunt. Only 8 points behind Montreal for that fourth and final playoff spot in the North Division. But Ottawa's only 3 points behind that. So, like I said, huge 8 points on the line here coming up over the next week. Thursday, Saturday, Monday, and next Wednesday against Vancouver. So let's see what Ottawa has to offer. Are you as excited as I am, Zach? Or what do you think about this week coming up?
I'm excited and I'm hopeful, but the Canucks have a 5-0 series win against us this season. So if Vancouver's looking to ride momentum, Ottawa's the perfect team to ride that wave against. So I'm hoping the Sens are still in fighting form, and I hope Vancouver loses it between now and tonight.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to which team is going to be consistent through these next four games. Whoever can be the most consistent with their play and attacking the net, I think they're going to get the W.
And it's been good for Vancouver getting this break, because it gives Elias Pettersson a little bit more time to recuperate and rehab and get back in the lineup. Still up in the air if he can make it in time for playoffs or even in general. But if you're the Canucks, you're just begging for him to come back.
Yeah, I mean, Elias Pettersson is just an absolute and absolutely incredible player, and they are definitely a much better team with him in the lineup. So hopefully for his sake, this break was a huge help and he can get back in the lineup sooner rather than later. Now, this is the moment that you have all been waiting for. Zach, what are the picks this week, and how are we doing heading into the picks? Because I know a few of the picks last week seemed like they were locks. So I don't know about you, but I'm excited to hear about this. Like, what's going on with your picks this week, Zach?
Well, last week we had four awesome picks. Only one of them didn't go through, and another one got postponed. It was the Phillies and Mets game last Thursday, got postponed because of rain, but we're going to hold on to it because they play again in June. So stick around. We'll give you the update on that. We'll add it to our record. Today's picks are a little risky, but I always work with what I'm given. Starting off this week with my money line. My money line pick today is the Carolina Hurricanes going against the Florida Panthers. Both of these teams are solid, and the Panthers came through for us last week against the Lightning. But I'm backing the Canes and a money line in a game like this. I can see it being a high-scoring but tight game. And with the standings being so close near the end of the season, I'd put my money on the Canes picking up a win in regulation or OT. For my over-under pick, we're going to the NBA. My rationale for this one, the New York Pelicans and Orlando Magic scoring under 225. My rationale again, the Orlando Magic is just frankly a bad basketball team. They're 18-40 right now, and the New Orleans Pelicans aren't anything special either, but they have a team average of almost 115 points per game, and the Magic have a measly 104 points per game for their team. So the Pelicans have to work extra hard to catch up to the Spurs for the last playoff spot in their conference, so they're either going to play their hardest or take it easy in this one. My third pick is the handicap and spread pick. It's between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Winnipeg Jets. Toronto is starting to buckle like they always do as we get closer to the playoffs. Losing twice to a team who hasn't played in weeks doesn't look good, and it's certainly not good for the mental game for the players. For Winnipeg, they need a bounce back win in this one to try and catch up to Toronto. They'll be trying their hardest, and I have a feeling Hellebuck is going to be between the pipes because he seems to be Matthews' kryptonite this year. I don't like putting my faith in Winnipeg against an angry Toronto, but with a 1.5 plus boost for the Jets, I think the odds of them making it out of the danger zone is a lot better. And now for my bonus pick of the week, we're going to the UFC. My guess is Masvidal has been working on his grappling and strength training since their last fight. What happened was Usman locked him up with his reach, not allowing Masvidal to get any space. And Masvidal fights to knock people out, and he never really got a chance with Usman in the last fight. Usman kept Masvidal against the cage and won the fight based on significant strikes. So if Masvidal wants to win this, he's going to have to be smart and fast. But that's Usman's whole MO. If Masvidal plays this one too safe, we'll get the same result as last time. And if Masvidal finds a way to get swinging and get offense in, Usman will be game. And he'll play a striking game too, which he can do. Just look back at the brawl he had against Colby Covington. I can see Masvidal being able to start the pace, but Usman's going to finish it. And I'm going all in on this one for a win by knockout, TKO, DQ, or submission. Kamaru Usman gets win by knockout against Masvidal. And those are my picks for this week, guys. What do you think?
Those are some great picks. Like you said, the Orlando Magic are without Magic, so getting that under is probably a safe bet. And I couldn't agree more with Usman getting that victory against Masvidal.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think these picks are absolute fire. I know I've said that before and it's backfired, but that 4-0 week that we had has me hyped. Last week, obviously, like you said, we had that one game postponed, so we could have easily been 3-1 last week. But yeah, I mean, Usman getting the win is going to be, I think that's going to be the big one for sure. The Hurricanes Florida game, that's a tight one. And yeah, what can you say about how bad the Orlando Magic are? So I'm excited for this week's picks, man. I think you did a really good job picking them.
Not only that, but like you can pretty much always guarantee that the Leafs are going to lose near the end. So the Jets being able to take that victory as well, solid picks, solid, solid picks.
The Leafs' loss are always our gain.
Yeah, especially when it comes to my Jets. I mean, I'm hoping that my boy Hellebuck just stands tall, shuts him out, or at least like gets a huge, huge game, because I mean, the Jets have had some issues in Toronto, but like you said, the Leafs are turning into their typical April Toronto Maple Leafs, where they start to fall, they start to fumble, and just in time for the playoffs. So we shall see, but I'm really excited for those picks.
They're exciting picks.
All right. Well, that does it for this week's episode of the Press Box. For yours truly, Eric Fox.
I'm Zach Maddow.
And I'm Lita McLeod.
Thank you for tuning in, and check us out next week at the same time here on CKDJ 107.9.
Hey.